Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It is March 15th, the Ides of March, 2014. I'm Harley Schlanger, and I will be your host today. I'm going to begin with a very quick review of the incredible developments of the last days. And these are developments which are not science fiction or pulp fiction or historical novel. These are things happening in real time, unfolding in front of us. And we're coming up to a head at the beginning of this next week where you have the election in the Crimea on Sunday. And then you have a threat that was delivered by John Kerry, the Secretary of State for President Obama, that if the Russians don't stop the referendum, that they will be punished, that they will face sanctions and other things come Monday or Tuesday. And the European Union this last week voted up sanctions. And on the webcast that Lyndon LaRouche did last night, he said we could be in nuclear war by Monday or Tuesday if this thing plays out as it is developing. Now, at the same time, we're closer to the impeachment of President Barack Obama than we've been at any time previously, also partly due to events of this last week. And just to review them quickly, and we'll be discussing them in much more detail in a few moments. But one of the important things is, as the crisis in the Ukraine, which was manufactured by the European Union and Obama acting on behalf of the British monarchy, as this crisis unfolded, Lyndon LaRouche was repeatedly featured on Russian television, and also several other LaRouche collaborators were brought onto Russian television to give a different view from the United States than the Obama line, which is all that's coming out from the Congress and the media, which is that Putin caused it, the Russians are the bad guys, and the U.S. is going to stand firm and punish them if they don't back away. Instead, the Russians, while reporting that, also reported what LaRouche had to say about the illegal nature of the putsch or coup that took place in Ukraine and the necessity to get Obama out of office before he brings us into World War III. Now, there was also a very prominent advertisement placed in the Washington Times that was on the wraparound on page one of Lyndon LaRouche's statement, J'accuse, his accusations against Obama, outlining Obama's impeachable offenses. That same day, Wednesday, there was an extraordinary press conference, and I would urge all our listeners to go on to the LaRouchePact.com website to look at this. But Congressman Walter Jones, a Republican from North Carolina, Congressman Stephen Lynch from Massachusetts, and Congressman Massey, joined by family members of the victims of 9/11, presenting, and also Senator Bob Graham chiming in, presenting the necessity for the release of the classified documents that were classified by Bush and continued to be under classification by Obama on the Saudi role in 9/11. And then at virtually the same time, Senator Dianne Feinstein, who up to this point has been a very close ally of President Obama, issued a blistering attack on the CIA and on the Obama administration for the spying on senators, for the interference into a Senate Select Committee on Intelligence investigation of torture. And this has become a very big, a growing scandal that's also included Democratic members of the House, such as Representative Adam Schiff of California, saying that these are serious allegations and represent a constitutional crisis. So we have motion in the Democratic Party. The Republicans are yet to really be heard from on these. Some Sensenbrenner came out and said this is a Nixonian-type moment. So we have that going on at the same point. We're otherwise heading into a confrontation that could go thermonuclear by next week. So joining us on the program today to discuss this will be Alicia Serratani. Many of you know her from LaRouche Pact TV She's an organizer and has spent a lot of time in Washington as part of a mobilization these last 3 weeks. And she'll give us a report from on the ground in Washington. And then we also have Will Wirtz, who's a senior researcher with Executive Intelligence Review, a longtime collaborator of Lyndon LaRouche's and also of mine. And Will has been monitoring these developments of moves toward impeachment, and there's probably no one else who has the overview of this that Will has other than Lyndon LaRouche. So Will and Alicia, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Harry.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, why don't we just start with your comments on these developments in this last week and why this represents a change, why Lyndon LaRouche said it's a pre-impeachment moment, or that we could say maybe we're on the threshold of impeachment.
Well, I think what's driving it is the threat of thermonuclear extinction, which Lyndon LaRouche uniquely has brought to the attention of the entire world at this point. And I say uniquely because no one else has done this. I think you pointed to, we've had an intervention in Washington, D.C. over the last 3 weeks involving a host of radio and newspaper ads, culminating in the one which occurred this week in the Washington Times. Basically, the situation right now is that people who even recently may have ruled out impeachment or have been allies of Obama, both on the Democratic side but also on the Republican side, are really faced with the reality of the necessity of ousting Obama now if we're going to avoid thermonuclear war. And we're talking about days, as you just indicated. There was a resolution which was brought before the UN today, authored by Samantha Powers, calling the referendum in Crimea invalid in advance. This was vetoed by the Russian UN envoy Churkin on the grounds of the principle of self-determination, which is embedded in the UN Charter, among other international law. And as you indicated, Kerry has already threatened there will be consequences if Russia recognizes this referendum, which is expected to pass as a result of the fact that you just had a Nazi coup in the central government of Ukraine. Now, the important thing is that as LaRouche has so dramatically pushed the necessity of impeaching Obama, you now have this development in the Senate with Dianne Feinstein, with Senator Wyden, among others. Both Democrats in the Senate Intelligence Committee. And you just have to realize that Dianne Feinstein has been a big defender of Obama. She has defended the NSA spying program. She has defended, even when John Brennan was before the committee, has defended the drone policy and the killing of Al-Awlaki, a U.S. citizen. So she's come out now, and as Lyndon LaRouche has pointed out, she could have done this at any time in the last 3 years, so why now? Well, the why now is because of the danger of thermonuclear war, as LaRouche has been emphasizing that. What has emerged in this whole situation is, once again, Obama has violated the Constitution. Last week, Wyden wrote a letter to Obama in which he pointed out, one of the paragraphs in his letter says, "As you know, as you are aware, the CIA has been sabotaging the committee, and as Feinstein said on the Senate floor on Tuesday, spying on the Senate illegally, unconstitutionally, in violation of the separation of powers in the Constitution, in violation of laws that they're not supposed to, CIA is not supposed to be operating within the United States."
Yeah, these are both laws that would seem on their own merits would be a basis for impeachment.
Exactly, and the other side of this, on the Republican side, which is interesting, is that Daryl Issa, who just, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago, we saw in New Hampshire, We intervened against him in New Hampshire on the impeachment issue, and he ruled it out completely. We raised the Ukraine issue. He denounced, even as he's been running around the country, including in New Hampshire, going after Obama's imperial presidency, he denounced Putin as the cause of of Ukraine. So he was acting like a total whore, and he has some of those tendencies, to be sure. But what did he say upon hearing about the what Feinstein reported in the Senate? He said, "This is treason. These are misdemeanors and high crimes." That's the language of impeachment. And it's very interesting because you mentioned Sensenbrenner. Sensenbrenner a month ago had co-authored a letter with ISA and also with Nadler, who I believe is a Democrat, to the Deputy Attorney General Cole, who in questioning had admitted that. The Congress is probably being spied on. So what Sensenbrenner did in saying this is Nixonian is to say that we want to know what you're doing in terms of spying, including what Dianne Feinstein just indicated. So what are we dealing here? We're dealing with a revolt. We're on the verge of revolt, and it better come now, both from Democrats in the Senate, and the argument against impeachment as being not practical is that it'll never pass the Senate. So this is very significant, this break. And, you know, similarly, you've got this Republican asininity, which is basically not to push for impeachment, because the Democrats won't allow it in the Senate. And for their own electoral opportunistic reasons. So we've got a situation where it is, you know, it's urgent and also increasingly feasible to get Obama out. And that is what Lenin LaRouche has actually accomplished in this period. And the issue is, do we do it quick enough? And the press conference that was held on Wednesday, involving Representative Walter Jones and also Lynch of Massachusetts, among others. I think Massey was also there. Pushing for the declassification of the 28 pages in the Congressional Joint Inquiry on 9/11, which 28 pages were classified by Bush, and although he said to the family members of victims of 9/11. That he would release them, Obama has also kept them classified. Now, this is very interesting because, of course, what you're dealing with here is the whole Cheney phenomenon. Because, you know, Cheney was instrumental in covering up what happened with 9/11, the Saudi role. Obama has continued that cover-up. Cheney, if you look at the situation, had to have been involved in a complicit fashion in the 9/11 operation in the first place. Then you have the torture, the waterboarding, which comes out of the police state measures that they created around the cover-up of the Saudi involvement in 9/11 in the first place. And so that's at stake in terms of what's going on in the Senate right now, because they've been trying to put together a report on the torture carried out under Cheney, who was really the president, as Lynn LaRouche has pointed out. And Obama, again, is defending Cheney. Occurred yesterday was that the White House admitted that they're using executive privilege not to hand over about 9,000 documents or pages of documents to the committee so they can complete their work. So he's protecting torture. He's protecting the Saudi involvement in 9/11 using the executive privilege,
he's going to Saudi Arabia sometime in the next couple of weeks.
Right.
And all of this is to defend what everyone knows was an illegal war in Iraq, at the point at which we're on the verge of another illegal war. Let me bring in Alicia now, because with what you just laid out about what's going on in the Congress, and especially the impact of our organizing, Alicia's been on the ground during this three-week period. By the way, before I get to Alicia, let me just add one other thing to this picture. Don't forget the election in Texas, the primary election. in which Keisha Rogers, who was running explicitly on a program of impeaching Obama in the Democratic primary for U.S. Senate, made history by becoming the first African-American woman to make it to a runoff. She's in a runoff that takes place on May 29th or 27th. But the important thing is that it was with the Democratic Party saying she's not a Democrat because she wants Obama out. Obviously, many Democrats want Obama out. So, Alicia, tell us a little bit about what we've been doing in Washington and what the reaction has been.
Well, the closer we get to a total crisis point, I think the more honest the Congress becomes, because these members of Congress have to choose between rhetoric or reality, and our effect as a institution in Washington, particularly over the last 3 weeks, where we've had the Rouge Pack Policy Committee in to help subsidize our efforts there. We as an institution have really forced these members of Congress to look at the crisis in the face and not hide behind partisan rhetoric or excuses or what have you. And the other fun irony about being this close to a crisis which Mr. LaRouche has really forecast and probably understands the best on the planet today, is that everything Obama does now is vindicating what LaRouche has said, particularly on this question of a thermonuclear confrontation with Russia. And just one fun anecdote, well, there are several, but one I think which really is exemplary of our impact. Late last week, an organizer and I were talking to a Congress member in his office and just briefing him, updating him on the crisis in Ukraine, what Obama's been doing, this national emergency he declared. And the congressman stopped and he said, you know what? It's amazing. I'm reading everything that you guys give me. I hear what you guys say. We talk in the hallways. We're talking now. So I read what you guys are putting out, and then I watch what happens. And it's fascinating. You guys are one step ahead of everything. And, you know, this is obviously not emblematic of the entire Congress, but this is the effect that we fight for by a number of factors. People have seen these large, high-visibility banner deployments we do right in front of the Longworth office building, where we intersect members of Congress as they go to vote, which is we've really built up an institution doing that. Talking to members in the hallway, having meetings with the staff, meetings with the members, and, you know, bringing them a global perspective. Because frankly, and I know this from talking to a lot of the members, a lot of these guys are in over their heads. And because they don't recognize the power of the sovereign authority, the power that they have as members of Congress, and that they uniquely are the ones who check the executive branch. And our big fight with them has been to educate them what is the cause of the crisis, what is at stake, what does Obama represent. And a few of them are beginning to get that, but it's been at the expense of having them confront a lot of the academic, ideological garbage that, you know, whose headquarters happens to be Washington, D.C., and this is happening on both sides, both Democrat and Republican.
Alicia, are more of them engaging in discussion with us now?
Oh, absolutely, because they absolutely. And you know, this has been a long-term process. People know who LaRouche is, but really the past couple of years, and then particularly with this 113 Congress, because the pace of events on the planet are happening so quickly, they rely on us for briefings. They rely on us to understand why the United States has so much concern over what happens in Ukraine. And that's been what's the best way to put this? Our rapid education of the Congress in the last couple of years while Obama's not out of office, I think it really has kept the United States on the map. And one example of that is this press conference that was held on Wednesday, which is the two sponsors of HRS 428, where you have a collaboration among different members of Congress, different layers of the intelligence community, and obviously the victims' families of 9/11 come together and make exactly the point that Mr. LaRouche has been making, which is that the people who financed these terrorist attacks are still free today, are still financing terrorism today, and that it's uniquely the power of the Congress to declassify these things. And every member of Congress at that press conference and every family member of the victims of 9/11 laid it right on the doorstep of the president. So you're having this converging effect where we lay the groundwork and other layers of the population come out and say, you know, make the point. This is what has to be on the agenda before anything else is addressed.
And Alicia, let me just ask another question, which is pertinent to the listeners. Have you found that the Congress is getting phone calls from the districts and they're responding to that?
Yes. The members are definitely getting a lot of pressure from their constituents. The problem is that we have yet to overwhelm the pressure of the mass media establishment. And I say that because when you talk to a member of Congress about impeachment, they'll agree with, and the number of members who agree with us on impeachment is probably unprecedented. However, the first thing they ask us is, well, what are the grounds for impeachment? That's not their question. They know what the grounds of impeachment are. That's the question that they're going to be faced, you know, by members of the media, you know, the whole institution that's protecting Obama right now. And so that's the wall of fire that we need to push these members of Congress through right now. Because they know the answer.
Well, Will, given the report from Alicia on the ground situation, it's clearly also that there's a lot more going on behind the scenes in terms of discussions of the intelligence picture and so on. We had the story, while the rest of the media was lying about what the Ukraine events were about, we put out the fact sheet, the Nazi networks inside the so-called opposition at Maidan. And presumably this is something also that has been circulating and that's having an impact to bring reality, as it turns out that the Nazis, in fact, are controlling the situation with the support of the neocons in the Obama administration.
Well,
I'd like you to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, who is the person who was caught on tape discussing how, you know, who should be head of the government? And, of course, the person that she discussed being the head of the government is now the head of the government. Yes. This is Victoria Nuland. So, and who is she? Well, she is a direct stooge of Dick Cheney. That's for whom she worked. So, again, the whole apparatus that's involved in this is a Cheneyak grouping. Which Obama is essentially attempting to outdo. So, again, I'd just like to go back in terms of this. Look at the Senate. This is in 2003, October 2003. There was a motion in the U.S. Senate brought by Senator Dorgan. Co-sponsored by Schumer of New York and Lieberman, Lieberman and also Graham of Florida, Lieberman of Connecticut. And this motion called for the declassification of the 28 pages on Saudi support for 9/11. It went to a vote. The vote was ended up being 43 in favor of declassification, 54 against. But many of the key people in the Senate voted to declassify the 28 pages. including Senator Boxer of California, Cantwell and Murray of Washington State, Biden, Clinton, Mikulski of Baltimore, Schumer of New York, Leahy of Vermont, Levin, and Wyden, among others. I mean, there's
a list of
43. These were all Democrats with two exceptions. John McCain, who, when he's, has a few rare moments of sanity when he's not trying to provoke World War III. And Specter, who's no longer in the Senate. They're all Democrats. So the point here is so these are now the people who are up in arms in terms of Feinstein and Wyden against Obama defending Cheney. So what you have here is the potential for creating a bipartisan move against Obama in the immediate period ahead. That's the only, as Lynn and LaRusha said, that's the only way out for the United States. Yes, look at the pattern with Obama. He supports al-Qaeda in Libya, al-Qaeda in Syria. And covers up for the Saudi support for al-Qaeda in respect to 9/11. And then he goes and supports Nazis in Ukraine. That's what you're dealing with. These are Nazis, as our fact sheet has indicated. And I think although many of the congressmen responded initially to this whole situation around Ukraine in a knee-jerk fashion, there's a growing awareness here as a result of what we've put out, and there's also growing awareness in Europe, particularly in Germany.
Let me just ask this. Alicia on that, because you brought it up. Alicia, were you finding that some of the Congress had been rethinking their initial knee-jerk reactions on Ukraine, or are they still somewhat dug in and supporting the administration?
No, I think there's absolutely been some hesitations in the last 3 weeks since the majority of the House voted in favor and support, this Ukrainian resolution in support of the quote-unquote Ukrainian people, Ukrainian opposition. I think that a lot of them are battling with this ideological anti-Putin plague that I think is just a holdover from the collapse of the Cold War and the collapse of the Soviet Union, and really only exists because of a lack of education. But yes, I think there's absolutely been a change of mind. Whether that translates into the critical mass necessary to stop Obama from moving forward, which we may see, first thing Monday morning, that remains to be seen, which is why it's imperative that as these members of Congress go back into their districts and really campaign, because that's what they're going to be doing, our activists and everybody, the American people who are watching this thing, confront them and continue to push them away from, any sort of notion that Russia is our enemy, that Putin is our enemy, and get them to realize that the fault, dear Congress, lies not in Vladimir Putin, but in Obama. And if you want to take out a dictator, impeach Obama instead.
And Alicia,
you might also say the fault lies, within ourselves in terms of the U.S. Congress for their cowardice, and the ad which LPAC just took out in the Washington Times addressed very directly. So I think that's what we have to break, is that cowardice, and as I think that ad ended up with at least the one section of it just really addressed this question. Do these congressmen really find Obama and Wall Street more frightening than being incinerated in a thermonuclear war?
Well, and Alicia, I was just going to ask, I assume we did get around the Nazis in Ukraine fact sheet, and also the Jacques. How is the distribution of that this week? The leaflet with Lyndon LaRouche's accusations, point by point. Obama did this, Obama did that, Obama did that. How did that get around? Did we do that this week?
Well, this was you know, this was the front page of the Washington Times, and I think the circulation, the printed circulation in the Washington, D.C. area is about 200,000 copies, and it's also delivered to every House and Senate office, which they, you know, put right on the coffee tables right as you walk into the offices. So this was unavoidable. And I think the Washington Times editorial staff took advantage of Lyndon LaRouche's message. We had the Jacques picture, Obama, on the left-hand side. And immediately to the right, the leading item was Dianne Feinstein accuses the CIA of spying on her committee. And so it's this, it was absolutely unavoidable. And it's, again, it's this convergence of accusations on Obama, putting everything at Obama's doorstep. And it couldn't be more clear. It is what Will said, is that we are doing the educating. We are making the absolute clear, airtight case that this can only be solved with the removal of Obama. We'll still have problems. We still have to put the country together. But the Congress members, you know, cannot continue to be intimidated by Obama, because their brutish tactics really are just indicative of the collapse of their own political credibility, economic credibility, which they're compensating for with just pure brute force. And that's the message that we're trying to get through to these members of Congress, and some of them are beginning to get it, but I guarantee it will take more.
Well, our listeners should take note of this. You should be calling in, but also look for your congressman in the district this next couple of weeks, because they're on, as often happens, at the point of where we're near an outbreak of war, in this case thermonuclear war. Congress is nowhere to be found, many of them hiding under their own bomb shelters. Now, Will, we've had a lot of discussion on this impeachment question, and there are several qualified lawyers. Bruce Fine is one, Francis Boyle another, who are prepared to draw up the impeachment bill. What would it take for a congressman to introduce it? There's nothing technical standing in the way of a congressman introducing a bill of impeachment, is there?
No. According to Francis Boyle, a congressman can actually introduce it by standing up in the Congress. There's a certain procedure which allows you to just raise an article of impeachment right away. So there's no obstacle in that sense. That's not the problem.
Right.
I think that from discussions that have been reported to me, which supporters have been the source of in terms of their discussion with various congressional offices, there are already, I mean, we put out a target list of people who in the Congress, who have made public statements in behalf of impeachment, although they have not taken the step. This came after Linda LaRouche said we probably need a core of about a dozen congressmen who are actual patriots to take action. So there is a list even before these developments in the Senate, but of course it has to be initiated in the House. There is a core of over a dozen congressmen. What we've been trying to do is to get them to really talk among each other. I think the reports that we've gotten are that there are a number who are perhaps on the verge of actually working with others to take the necessary action. The kind of thing that we really need is for a number of congressmen, it may not even have to be a dozen. It could even be one. It could even be three or four, because then others will join in, to just break the ice and take the action. I think it's dangerous that the Congress is out of session right now with the Crimean vote tomorrow, and with Kerry having threatened actions with consequences directed at Russia if they accept the results of the referendum, which they've said they will. So we're in a dangerous, you know, situation. And, you know, I think we really have to say to these congressmen, get back in Washington and actually launch this impeachment as early as Monday. I mean, that's the kind of situation that we have, that you know, that's the kind of situation we're in right now. So there's no technical opposition to, you know, obstacle to doing this. All the grounds exist. You know, one congressman has indicated that he's you know, there's some indications that he has actually drawn up a bill of impeachment. So it takes precisely what our ad says, which I just read. Are you more afraid of Obama and Wall Street than you are being incinerated? It wouldn't just be you incinerated, obviously. It'd be our nation, people, and not only our nation, but human beings throughout this planet. That's what's at stake.
Well, and this is one of these points that Mr. LaRouche said the other day in talking about how you use the future to shape policy. He said, this is not one of these situations where you can wait and see what happens and then say something, because what might happen is thermonuclear war, which would wipe out humanity. So you have to be preemptive. And given Lynn's track record on these forecasts over the last 40 years, you'd be a fool to wait. Now, Alicia, one of the things that I think is also important is this question of, you've alluded to it and discussed it so far in the program, the growth of Lynn's credibility inside the Congress. And, of course, you've been running around on Capitol Hill now for a couple of years. Obviously, it is in a completely different, there's been a complete phase change, I guess, in this recent period, hasn't there?
Yeah, I think so. And again, I think Obama does more to validate Lyndon LaRouche's forecast than anybody else on Capitol Hill, which is one of the nice ironies of the situation. The other aspect, which we are beginning to get, not yet a breakthrough, but cracks in understanding, is Mr. LaRouche's warning that what is driving the world towards war is the collapse of the transatlantic system, which is what Mr. LaRouche has been warning about for 30 years. And it's fascinating to see the limitations in the way members of Congress think. And this is what I meant earlier when I said that a lot of these guys are in over their heads, because they don't think in terms of macroeconomics. They don't think in terms of whole systems. And it's a big challenge to get them to understand that the aggression from the West has a lot to do with the lack of, you know, the failing economy of the transatlantic, the utter bankruptcy of the transatlantic. And as a matter of fact, the same Congress member who I alluded to earlier, who said, you know, I'm reading your things and it's fascinating to see them, you know, I read the papers and a few days later and I see what's happening. The same Congress member then said, and you know, this, you know, I'm beginning to understand that you have a system of globalization on the planet that has led to the bankruptcy of the West and the gutting of the vital infrastructure of the West. These are his words. And it's the MO for the last couple of decades has been to go to loot other parts of the world. And then he said, well, you know, then I sort of put it together. Then I see, oh, what is Ukraine? Ukraine would be a great place to loot. So, mm-hmm. You know, that kind of education and sort of bringing members of Congress really up to, you know, onto the stage of history where Mr. LaRouche lives is the big struggle. And the question is, can we do it quick enough? Can we get these guys to think in terms of whole processes and not just pieces and parts quick enough? That's you know, that remains to be the challenge. I mean, there's a lot of ideological problems, obviously, to making this breakthrough. But no one in Congress can deny that we are not in a recovery, that the major banks are only more powerful, bigger, you know, too big to fail, you know, times two or three. No one can deny that. But it comes back to this question of courage. Are they willing to take on an increasingly aggressive Wall Street who has a lot to lose, an increasingly aggressive administration who's run largely by Wall Street in the City of London? Are they willing to take that on and, you know, level the playing field and start over again?
Well,
so, yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, Will, that given what you just talked about, one of the polemics that has been sharpened by Lyndon LaRouche over the last couple months is that what we're really facing is the continued effect of the existence of an empire and Zeus versus Prometheus. And clearly we have a group in the oligarchy that is prepared to go to nuclear war. It's not just that they might try it because they think they might win it, but they don't care if they wipe out huge sections of the human race. That, in fact, is their policy. And, Will, I know that you've done a lot of work in years ago on Nicholas of Cusa, and Lynn has come back to this over and over and over, the handful of Prometheans who have stood up. And part of the fight to get that today is not just kicking people in the ass, but getting people to change their sense of identity, to understand what it means to be a Promethean when you have a faction of Zeus oligarchs who are out to wipe out the human race. And I'd like to hear what you think on that polemic that Lynn has been developing.
Yeah, actually today, in a discussion earlier, Lyndon LaRouche referred to the Queen of England as the Empress Zeus. Now, listen, the basic problem that mankind is faced with, actually, Friedrich Schiller also addressed this in a piece he wrote contrasting Sparta with Athens, where you have one is a dictatorial system and the other is a system that's based upon the actual promotion of the nature of man as creative, as in the image of the creator. And throughout history, as Lynn has emphasized, we've been faced with the problem of empire. Even in terms of the early Christians, this was referred to as the Whore of Babylon, which might be another good name for the Queen of England.
That's what Prince Philip calls her.
Yeah, right.
Endearingly.
Yeah. So you've had a succession of empires which are Zeusian in nature, in the sense that Zeus was a greenie. He was thoroughly committed to not allowing science and technology, because he recognized that and also making sure that there was not a growth in population, and the population didn't have a sense of true hope, not Obama type hope, but true hope based upon human creativity and the productivity of the human mind. And you know, in the period, I mean, essentially America is a result of an effort to defeat empire, not just and it goes back before our war with the British Empire. It goes back to Nicholas of Cusa, because after the Roman Empire, then what you had was a Venetian financial empire. And look what that empire brought about in the midst of Europe. They brought about 100 years war, which is, I mean, what have we been through in the last century? 100 years war after the fall of Bismarck in the 1890s. You had World War One, World War Two, and now we're threatened with World War Three. And in between, it wasn't as if there were any great periods of peace. It was one war after another, as we've perpetual warfare. This is what you have under the Venetian system: 100 years war from about 1300s through into the mid 1400s. There was the Black Plague. The reduction of the population by over 50% throughout Europe and beyond. And you know, this is this is really what we're threatened with right now, as you indicated, the Empress Zeus, otherwise known as Elizabeth, has explicitly called for reducing the world's population from 7 to 1 billion people. Now, Cusa, Nicholas of Cusa, was a really unique individual who, through the powers of his own mind, perhaps in part, as many in that period were, inspired by the example of Joan of Arc, actually, what did this guy do? He developed the basis for the United States of America. He wrote a book in 1433 called Concordancia Catholica, in which he developed for the first time in human history the idea that there should be government by the consent of the governed, which is the concept of, you know, which came to the United States, or what became the United States, of the Massachusetts Bay Colony, and then is embedded in our Declaration of Independence and Constitution. The very principle which is violated today by Obama, by Cheney previously, and so forth. So, but it wasn't just that. He also developed the concept of science in a truly Promethean manner. So basically what he's laying out is you need a society which is organized so as to promote this unique quality of man, as distinct from a beast, of creativity and the capacity for endless qualitative advancements.
Well, that's what's written into our Constitution, which the current president is so intent on urinating on.
Right. And so, you know, so the basically he developed science along with Brunelleschi, and what you've had is every great scientist since Nicholas of Cusa's time has based his scientific breakthroughs on Cusa's methodology. And then on top of that, it's Cusa there were two individuals, Ferdinand Martin, who was a bishop in Lisbon, Portugal, and Paolo Toscanelli, who was a scientist based in Italy. They were collaborators of Nicholas of Cusa. He actually had them as participants in some of his dialogues. For instance, Ferdinand Martin is a lead participant in a dialogue which Cusa wrote called The Not Other. And Toscanelli is one of his dialogue participants in a piece on the quadrature of the circle. They became his the executors of his last will and testimony, right? So they were very close to him. Now, as it turns out, Columbus met Ferdinand Martin in Portugal, and it was through that connection that Toscanelli then sent to corresponded with Columbus and gave him a map which Columbus took with him when he sailed west and discovered the Western Hemisphere. So as Lynn LaRouche has indicated, the intention of Cusa was that Europe was thoroughly controlled by the oligarchy, and that the only hope for humanity was to sail west. They didn't know necessarily that it was the Western Hemisphere was there, but they knew that they could reach by going west they could reach the east, and they knew that they had to outflank the European oligarchy, the Venetians, and America is a product of that intention of Nicholas of Cusa, which is a Promethean concept, as Harley introduced this this discussion, as opposed to the Zeusian concept, and that's really what's at stake today. I mean, obviously, the British Empire is willing to go to thermonuclear war because it's probably the most rapid way to reduce the world's population from 7 billion to 1 billion or even less.
Well, I think, and this gets at one of the points Alicia made earlier, which is that if we were able, through the impeachment of Obama and then legislation like Glass-Steagall, to defeat the British Empire, we would be in a situation where we could be creating a whole new world. And I know this is part of what we try to get across to some of these congressmen and others, when it comes to questions such as NWAPA, strategic defense of Earth, and so on. And I just wonder, to what extent are these congressmen capable, from your experience, Alicia, of taking up these bigger ideas, getting beyond the current drivel in terms of the partisanship and ideology, to actually think about what could be possible?
Well, I think you have a lot of serious members who look at the economic crisis in a, you know, with genuine concern. But I'll tell you, as serious as some of these members may be, Republican or Democrat, as much as they may love NWAPA, love the concept, they know that it can't happen in the current paradigm. They say it'll never happen under Obama, or it'll never happen with this current economic system. And that's where, you know, our movement is really very different, because it's the motivation of all of these incredible things that we have done in the past and can do in the immediate future that motivates us to make the kinds of changes like Obama's impeachment happen. And that's the difference, is that we are responding to the future, what's possible. And a lot of these members are responding to the present and also the past. They're using past experiences of what's possible, and they're linearly extending them into the present, into the future, to say this can't happen, it will never happen, that will never happen, instead of really embracing the future, which they are responsible for creating, to move and direct their present actions. And, you know, it's everything that Mr. LaRouche says about sense, perception, and experience. Why it will fail you every time. And that's one of the big crises in American politics today. People just don't know how to think. They don't have that same commitment to the future. It doesn't mean that they don't react to, you know, the crisis in a humane way, in a thoughtful way, but that's not what makes human human. You know, pity and sorrow isn't, you know, isn't what makes a human a human. It's a commitment to the future. And, you know, one of the unfortunate things is a lot of members of Congress who actually lived during a time when we still had a sort of a JFK perspective, both economically and in foreign policy, a lot of these guys are retiring because of the dysfunctionality of the U.S. Congress.
Well, on that point, let's just take up the immediate future. I want to hear from both of you on this. Look, Will, as you know, as we started the program, the residents of the Crimean area of Ukraine will be voting tomorrow. And the polls are going to open in a few hours, and they're going to be voting on a breakaway from Ukraine, which John Kerry has essentially said is a virtual act of war. The illegitimate government of Ukraine is accusing the Russians of carrying out warfare against Ukraine. So I don't think the vote is the referendum is going to be canceled. It's going to take place. That puts us on Monday or Tuesday. The Congress is out of session. Could a congressman go back in and do something? Could a bill of impeachment be introduced, or at least a statement of an intent to do that? As Lynn is saying, that may be all it takes to break the current direction. What do we have to do to make sure this doesn't happen? War doesn't break out Monday or Tuesday?
Well, I don't know for sure, but generally the Congress does not go into recess, even though they're not there. They in order to prevent Obama from making additional recess appointments. so they're formally probably still in session. So anybody could come back under those conditions and introduce a bill of impeachment. The other thing which they can do is you could get two or three congressmen together, and they could fly back to Washington D.C. and hold a press conference, and you know as well if the Congress is not in session. I'm assuming that they technically are. So this doesn't prevent them from taking action. And that's why I was saying at the beginning that, you know, given that the referendum's tomorrow, and the Russians are, all the evidence is that this is going to pass. Secondly, the Russians, in vetoing this resolution, U.S. resolution, calling the referendum invalid in advance, it's clear that they're going to recognize this, because what Churkin said today is that this is based upon the principle of self-determination. So they're going to recognize it, and then is Kerry and Obama going to go ahead with sanctions and other actions? So this is going to come to a head tomorrow and Monday. So I think it's urgent that we really urge congressmen to get back into Washington, D.C. and introduce a bill of impeachment on Monday.
What that means is that anybody who sees a congressman between now and Monday or has a town meeting opportunity or can call must move into high gear immediately. And again, Alicia, your sense is that if a couple of congressmen started moving on this, given what's happened in the Senate among Democrats with Feinstein and Wyden, your sense is that we could get somewhat of a steamroller going?
Absolutely. I think so. I think that there's actually a lot of common cause among Democrats and Republicans on the issue of Obama's impeachment, and it takes a few people to stand forward, and I think that we could have a dramatically different nation, one way or the other, by the end of next week. And that we've got to a point where nothing else but the removal of Obama from office is going to take us off the pathway towards a thermonuclear war with Russia. There's no other tweaking or waiting or moving or anything like that. We've gotten to the point where really only this is going to work.
Well, Alicia, let me just ask you one other question. As someone who's been involved in some of the Keisha Rogers campaigns in Texas in the past, were you finding that this was known in Washington, what happened with Keisha's vote getting into the runoff, and did it cause a bit of a shock among some congressmen, or was it something they expected?
No, absolutely. It's certainly known by the entire Democratic Texas delegation. As one member, a prominent member of the Texas Democratic Party, opened up a reception saying, pardon me, I'm a little bit tired. I was up all night. This is right after the primary. This is March 5th. I was up all night watching our primary in Texas. She said, I did fine in mine, but, we've got a bit of a problem in Texas, and it looks like we still have that problem. Now, these guys are being mobilized to think of it as a problem, though. I think there's a lot of surprise, some of it pleasant surprise.
Their problem is Obama's still in the White House, and he's nominally
right,
a Democrat.
Right. But again, it's this factor of, again, the LaRouche PAC are defying the quote-unquote conventional calculus or politics of Washington, D.C.
Well, Will, people do? What should people do in the next 24 to 48 hours besides going to church?
maybe they should pass up the church, and unless they're going to intervene in the church, because you can pray anywhere. And you can also be preyed upon. So I would say that basically, listen, this is congressmen are back in their districts. Also, you got St. Patrick's Day coming up. There are parades in some locations which will probably be attended by congressmen. I know that Keisha's going to be involved in a parade in Texas.
Today and tomorrow for Keisha.
Right, and then also Mike Steger in San Francisco. So, all I would say is this is the time to really get to your congressman. This, today, tomorrow, Monday. District offices, town meetings, whatever. But, really urge them to get back into Washington, D.C. and introduce bill of impeachment, and to speak to others who they know are considering this, so that it's a joint action.
There's nothing to hold back the population, and if you're on this program, it means you know something about LaRouche and LaRouche PAC. You can get all the documentation you need on LaRouche PAC What you can't get on the LaRouchePAC.com website is courage. That has to come from within. And right now we need a population of thoughtful but riled up Americans to demand that our country be taken away from the British Empire and the placeholder for the empire, Obama. So Will and Alicia, thank you very much for being on the program today. This has been the LaRouche Show. We'll be back next Saturday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, assuming that thermonuclear war doesn't intervene between now and then. So you do something to make sure that doesn't happen, and then we'll have a good show next week.
Okay.